Well, good morning, everybody. How are we doing? Excellent. My name is Tim Porter. I'm one of the pastors here at Faith Community. Thank you for being here with us this morning. Again, if you're new to FCC, new to Faith Community, or you're new to going to church, right after the service, we'll have our Connection Center open, and we would love to host you for a time, answer any questions you might have about Faith Community and helping you take next steps in getting connected up here on mission with us. Also, you know, just so you know, our mission here as a church is to make more and better disciples of Jesus. And so we exist to serve you in following after Jesus and learning how to follow after Jesus. And so if I can be of any service to you in seeking to apply the things that we're talking about here this morning in the teaching time, I'll be available right after the worship service. And I would love to just chat a little bit. So come on up here right in front of the stage here, and I'll be available for you about 20 minutes before I go get a donut and recharge for the next service. So, all right? Okay, good. So last March, I read an article that started out a little bit funny, but then it started to, it put its finger on an ache in my heart. It's from the Boston Globe. The writer, the journalist, the reporter is Billy Baker. Starts out this way. I had been summoned to the editor's office at the Boston Globe magazine with the old, "We have a story that we think you would be perfect for." This is how editors talk when they want you to do something that they're not sure you want to do. And here is the pitch. We want you to write a story about how middle-aged men have no friends. "Excuse me," I said. "I have plenty of friends. Are you calling me a loser? I think you are. You're calling me a loser." The editor told me there is all sorts of evidence out there about how men, as they age, let their close friendships lapse, and that the fact that this can cause all sorts of problems and have a terrible impact, quite frankly, on physical health as well. I told the editor that I'd think about it. This is how journalists respond when they really don't want to do something they've been asked to do. But as I walked back to my desk in the newsroom about a distance of 100 yards, I quickly took stock of my life to try to prove that I had plenty of friends and that I was not perfect for this story. First of all, there was my buddy Mark. We went to high school together, and I still talk to him all the time, and we hang out all the... Oh, wait. How often do we really actually hang out? Maybe 4 or 5 times a year? And then there was my other best friend from high school, Rory, and... Ooh, I genuinely could not think of the last time that I spent time with him. Had it already been a year entirely? It's entirely possible. There are all those other good friends who feel as if they are still in my lives because we keep tabs on one another via social media. But as I ran down the list of those I considered real, true, lifelong friends, I realized that it had been years since I had seen many of them, even decades for a few. And by the time I got back to my desk, I realized that indeed I was perfect to investigate and write this story. Not because I was unusual in some way, but because my story is very typical. And as I looked into what that means, I realized that in the long term, I was heading down a path that was very, very dangerous. The Surgeon General, or former Surgeon General, Vivek Murthy, has said many times in recent years that the most prevalent health issue in the country is not cancer. It's not heart disease. It's not obesity. It's loneliness. It's isolation. See, we're not made for isolation. We're not made for it. We're made for friendship. We're made for relationship. And quite frankly, much of the teaching that I had growing up, especially from the book of Proverbs growing up in the church, was about choosing the right kinds of friends. Because as you grow up, your family is your primary formation entity until you start getting into middle school, high school, and then you move on from there. Your friends become your primary formation group. And so you want to take time to choose your friends carefully. And Proverbs has things to say about that. Don't become good friends with somebody who's given to anger, Proverbs says, because eventually you'll become like them. But the book of Proverbs also says a lot about how to become a good friend, how to be a true friend, and that's what we want to look at today. We're seeking extraordinary wisdom from an ancient book showing us actually that the ancients were not all that different than we are. Not much has changed at a heart level in human history from the ancients. Just as they needed to seek true friendship, so do you and I. And quite frankly, as we look at Proverbs to help us avoid isolation in our own lives, it has the potential, if we take these things on and what the book of Proverbs says about how to be a true friend to somebody else, to others, we could actually seek to renew the St. Croix Valley, because there is isolation all over the place in this valley. And we could bring renewal into it, which is part of our vision, to see Christ renewing the neighborhoods and the valley through us. And so today we want to just look at two points: that true friendship is created and true friendship is cultivated. It's created and it's cultivated. And before we look at the passages, a couple things, and as we're going through Proverbs, I don't have a page number for you to look at, but all the scripture passages that we're looking at today are printed in your worship folder, so you can open that and you can go through there. And just like last week I mentioned this, there's two authors, two speakers that have shaped me significantly about this topic of friendship, and then last week about humility and pride, and that's C.S. Lewis and also Tim Keller. I don't see a lot of people, unfortunately, talking a lot about friendship, and so C.S. Lewis has done a great job with this, and also Tim Keller, along with the Bible. And then we have available as well a book out in the cafe area if you want to pick it up. It's $8. It's by a man named Vaughn Roberts. He's an Aussie. He's Australian. And so he's written a book called True Friendship. And this is very helpful as well, called Walking Shoulder to Shoulder, True Friendship. So today, true friendship is created and true friendship is cultivated. Here are the passages or the verses that we're going to look at today. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. Every introvert puts that over their doorstep, right? No, just kidding. I'm an introvert. Whoever sings songs to a heavy heart is like one who takes off a garment on a cold day and like vinegar on soda. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, "Ha, I'm only kidding. I'm only joking." Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, and profuse are the kisses of an enemy. Oil and perfume make the heart glad, and the sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice rising early in the morning will be counted as cursing. Amen. All you non-mourning people, iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. Whoever rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with his tongue. A man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now, as we hear, just a brief observation, a quick observation as we begin, as we read through these passages, or these Proverbs together, one observation is that friendship, quite frankly, is very important to the Bible. The Bible loves friendship. God loves friendship. We're made for friendship. And friendship is also, this side of heaven, rare. And it can be, and should be, at times closer than family bonds. And just because we have many acquaintances doesn't mean we actually have true friends. Proverbs 18:24, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. That's the kind of friendship that we're made for, someone who sticks closer than a brother. True friends will probably only be few in our lives, even for the most extroverted of us in the room. And even if we have strong friendships with God, a spouse, our families, there is actually a relationship that you and I are created for called friendship. And it's important. It's important for our hearts. And so we want to look and see, what is friendship and how is it created? Or, yeah, what is it and how is it created? Because it is created. C.S. Lewis, in his book, The Four Loves, a very important book, distinguishes friendship from the three other types of love that you and I experience as human beings. The other types of love are affection or romantic love or charity, a gracious kind of love. And he says, though, that friendship is different. I mean, there's all kinds of things in common, but there's distinctions between them. And he says, friendship actually begins when you find somebody else where you say, "Oh, you too? I thought I was the only one." you too? I thought that I was only one. And what he's getting on with that is that friendship needs to be about something. Romantic love, for those of you who are married or getting married, you know what we're like, right? We love to talk about each other, about our love for each other. Oh, I love you so much. You're so sweet. I love you. Friends don't do that. I mean, that's just sort of weird, right? Every now and again, you'll say, man, I really love you. I really love you, and I'd die for you. But, you know, it's once every year, you know? Something like that, you know, because friendship isn't about the friendship. Friendship is actually about something else. Friendship is about mission, a common mission. Lovers, romantic love, is you're staring at one another. Friendship is you're standing side by side looking at a common goal, looking at a common vision. You're going somewhere. With friendship, there's something to share. There's a place to go. There's a journey to take together. There's a common mission. That's why I talk about friendship being created. It's created. It's something that you discover. It's not something that you go out seeking in and of itself. This is one of the things that's so difficult about friendship, is that if you know that you don't have friends and you're looking for friends, one of the things we try to do is we try to find friends. No, don't do that. Find a common mission and let the common mission create the friendship. That's the important thing about friendship. It's created. Some of the stories that I love most have this mission that creates friendship. On Memorial Day, I started my annual viewing of The Band of Brothers, which is a series by Tom Hanks that follows the 101st Airborne as they go from paratrooper training to taking the Eagle's Nest and capturing Hitler's headquarters. And what happens is that mission creates friendship. It brought all kinds of people together on a common mission, and men who would live for another, who would die for another, because they had a common mission. It brought them together. Some of you love Harry Potter. What's Harry Potter about? It's about friendship. Ron, Hermione, Harry. A friendship that's created around what? Do they all think Harry's great? No, there's a mission. The discovery that Voldemort is still in existence and they need to destroy him. It's a common mission that brings them together. It brings them together. Lord of the Rings, all right? So I'm going to go all my geekiness right here today. Lord of the Rings, what's going on in Lord of the Rings? It's a fellowship of a ring. It's a fellowship, a common mission. This ring has to be destroyed, and a fellowship is created between humans, dwarves, and elves, especially dwarves and elves. Come together in this common mission, and Gimli and Legolas become deep friends, and they're at once enemies. Mission, this common mission. If you want to become friends with other people, it must be created. Look to your common interests. And the reason why C.S. Lewis talks this way, and others have talked this way about friendship, is because this is what happened with Jesus. You know that Jesus came to actually create in us friendship. He came to overcome our enemy status with him, our rebellion against him. He came to overcome our rebellion to make enemies friends. And you know how he did it? With mission. He created disciples by inviting them into mission. Come, follow me, and I'll make you disciples of others. He gave them a mission, and that common mission, which was centered on him, so this is unique about Jesus. You don't want a common mission centered on you and your relationships, your friendships. That's weird. But what Jesus did is he invited them into mission, and that mission, that discipleship, that friendship started to develop. Now, our culture is quite frankly fascinated with individualism. And because our culture is fascinated with individualism, what we tend to think about is that you're not somebody unless you're involved in some kind of romantic relationship with someone. I mean, look at the tabloids, look at the magazines. No one's asking who's friends with who. Everybody's wondering who's sleeping with whom. But Jesus, this is interesting about Jesus. Jesus was never married. And he was a perfectly fulfilled human being. But he had friends. Our culture places way too much an overemphasis on romantic relationships when it needs to start looking at friendships. Because even the best of marriages, even the most romantic of marriages, need to be at their core friendships. It's a common mission, a common vision. We're going somewhere. We're going to meet Jesus together. Friendships are created. And one of the beautiful things about Jesus' mission, quite frankly, is that it's big enough to last, and it's big enough to keep all kinds of people who would never be friends together becoming friends and gaining friendship and cultivating friendship, because The mission is big. Jesus calls us in. You know, some of my friendships wane and I lose them over time. Why? Because I'm not interested in the things that I used to be interested in anymore. I used to play football all the time, and all my friendships, most of them are based around football, and I'm not playing anymore, and I don't see those guys anymore. We talk about the old times when we see one another at a game or something like that, but that interest is gone. The mission of Jesus and the gospel of Jesus is actually big enough and enduring enough that if we become friends under the banner of the gospel of Jesus, our friendship never, ever, ever, ever dies, ultimately. Michael W. Smith in the 80s, I can't believe I'm doing this, sang a song, "Friends Are Friends Forever." Okay, I'm shuddering. I'm getting in a bad way. But he was right. In the gospel, on the mission of Jesus, when we come into the mission of Jesus and our friendships are focused on the mission of Jesus, those friendships never, ever end ultimately. We'll say goodbye for a time, but they'll continue on in the new heavens and new earth. It's the beautiful thing about friendships that are created by Jesus. They last forever. And they can keep us going as long as we stay faithful to the gospel and faithful to the one who's faithful to us. Friendships are created, but they also have to be cultivated. There's a bit of a tension here with this, that it's like if you try to make friends with somebody when you don't have a common interest, it's going to be really hard to keep that friendship going. So it has to be created, but we also have to cultivate these friendships. And this is where Proverbs focuses a great deal, is how to cultivate friendships. True friends have at least three characteristics, or we learn to be three friends. We can cultivate our ability to be a good friend to somebody else. And that's where we want to focus, is not how other people have treated us, but how can we be good friends, true friends to others. First, Proverbs tells us that we need to be loyal. It goes without saying, but it's true. We need to be reminded of this. Proverbs tells us we need to be loyal. Proverbs 17:17, a friend loves at all times. A friend loves at all times. And a brother is born for adversity. Now, some of you who have brothers are going, yeah, they're a pain. They are born for adversity. That's not what it's saying. The adversity is that there is a sense in which family ties, there's an oughtness to family ties. There's an oughtness to them. There's an obligation to them that in times that are really hard, you pretty much know that your family is going to be there for you. But there's something different about a friend. A friend chooses that. A friend chooses that. They don't have to. Now, the Proverbs remind us as well that when it says that a friend loves at all times, this doesn't mean that you have to be incessantly and constantly always with one another. Proverbs also reminds us introverts in the room, let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you, right? So it doesn't have to be that it has to be all the time. So all the time is not what's getting at when it says a friend loves at all times. Not all the time, constantly, all the time in your place and in your business. But it's through the extremes of life. The great joys, your friend is there. Your great sorrows, your friend is there. Someone has chosen to say, in the worst of times and the best of times, I will be there with you. That's what a true friend does. That's what makes it so powerful. Many years ago now, my brother-in-law, at the age of 32, died, leaving unexpectedly, and he left behind his wife and two children. And the children, my nephew and niece, are very young, 3 years old and like 2 or 3 months old. And I watched my wife go into family obligation, duty, care for your sister mode. It was beautiful to watch. We adjusted our family completely for about a year, where my wife was going up to care for my sister-in-law and care for our niece and nephew, and it was a joy to do it. It's like we're family. This is what we do when we're family. But it's even more amazing when somebody chooses to do that. When that family bond isn't there, that something deeper than a family bond is actually created because someone says, I choose to do this. I choose to be here with you no matter what, no matter what. It's powerful. And every human heart is made for it. Every human heart is made for that. This also is a challenge to us, especially in our culture, because in our culture, we tend to fill our time with all kinds of activities. And what time or what friendship requires is availability. Availability. I'll be there whenever you need me. Anticipating when someone might need you and acting and not waiting. And so one of the difficult things for us is that we have to really prioritize our time and be really intentional with our time. Going through this sermon this week and just thinking and praying, it's like, oh, these have been my priorities. God, my wife, our boys, and my vocation. And I've had to change. God, my wife, our boys, friends, my vocation. Now, of course, with all those are all important things, and sometimes it's hard to wrestle with which one is more important in the moment, but friends were after vocation. I can't do that. I can't do that. Friends need to be more important than leading a church. Friends need to be more important than our jobs, because we're made for it, to elevate it. Friends are cultivated by, or we become true friends when we cultivate loyalty in our lives to people. There's also another way to cultivate friendship, and that is to be attentive. To be attentive. This is one of the reasons why I'm so glad that Penny and Pat are putting on the seminar right after this, about asking good questions. About it's right after this service and after the next one, as we go discipleship seminar. Please attend it. Why? Because one of the things that we need to do as true friends is be attentive to our friends. Be attentive to their hearts. What's going on in them, and to know those things. Proverbs 25:20. Whoever sings songs to a heavy heart is like one who takes off a garment on a cold day and like vinegar on soda. 27:14. Whoever blesses his neighbor with a loud voice, rising early in the morning, will be counted as cursing. What kind of person sings songs of delight to a heavy heart? Someone who has no idea what's going on in their friend's heart. We're not attentive. We're not attentive to what's going on in somebody else's heart. Even this blessing. So Proverbs 27:14, a neighbor who blesses loudly in the morning. I mean, you're trying to do good to somebody else. You're trying to bless them and encourage them, and you do it loudly when they're not a morning person, you're actually cursing them. You got to know that. We got to know those things. We have to know them, which requires that we be paying attention. I am a morning person. Our youngest son, Seth, is a morning person. My wife is not a morning person. Morning begins at 11 o'clock for her in her preferred time frame. I, on the other hand, feel like I have wasted most of my day if I'm still in bed at 7 a.m. I feel like I got to work really fast to catch up because I've missed most of my day. That's how it is. And if I learned very early on, if I try to greet her in the morning with, oh, it's so good to see you this morning. Oh, I've missed you. I've been up for like 5 hours. Right, where have you been? Not even if I'm not being snarky. I mean, if I'm just trying to bless her, I mean, really, I'm like just really glad. Oh, it's so good to see you this morning. Hi, just leave me alone, be quiet. You know, she's gracious, but I'm cursing her when I'm trying to bless her. Being attentive, asking good questions, knowing what's going on in your friends, not just their business, but what's going on in their hearts. What's going on in their hearts? It's important for us to do. Some time ago, so I tend to use humor in tense situations. It's worked for me in the past. Many years ago, I was on a remodeling crew, and I was learning how to do construction and remodeling, and I was working with a guy who we'd become good friends. We had this common mission together as we want to build gate doors together and remodel and all that kind of stuff. We became good friends, and we'd talk all the time. He was an extrovert, so he talked more than I. He thought I was a really good listener because I was just trying to do my job anyway. But he was looking for another job, and he went for a job interview, and one of the questions in HR that came to him was, so how do you handle stressful situations? And he just thought that was the funniest question to ask. He's like, how do I answer that question? Like, it just depends on the stressful situation, you know? So we were, that whole day when he came back from the interview for this other job, we were just laughing and like, oh yeah, that is a really silly question, you know? I use it now, but it's a really silly question, right? And so that day, there was some miscommunication, and we were supposed to have XL Energy come out and spray for lines and all that kind of stuff, and that didn't happen. And one of our coworkers sparked a line because he was digging into the ground, and he could have been significantly electrocuted. And this was going to cost a lot of money because it was a big wire that needed to be replaced now, and so he's calling in, and he's freaking out, and it's stress. And I just looked at him like, Dan, how do you handle stressful situations? And it worked. I mean, he just like started to laugh. He's like, thank you so much. And he'll still send me an email. He goes, you remember that time when you did that, right? I'm like, yes, I do. You're welcome. It was good, right? I've done that to other people. And they came back to me. I really felt like you minimized what I was going through. You're right. I did. I wasn't paying attention. I didn't know who you were. I wasn't paying attention to what's going on. So this just reminds us about friendship as well, is that we're going to be imperfect at it, and we're going to hurt one another. And when we do hurt one another, when we do curse somebody else, when we think we're trying to bless them, when we're trying to bless them and we're actually cursing them, when we feel cursed, it's on us as friends. Don't ignore that. Talk to your friend about it. Let them know what's going on. And this is where, as friends, this gets cultivated. We ask for forgiveness. We tell other people where we've been offended or we've been sinned against. Even when it was unintentional, we bring those things up because we want to keep this friendship going. We want to be true friends because true friends, we hurt each other. Not intentionally. And then when we do, we forgive one another. And that friendship grows and it lasts. If it's not talked about, it's going to create a rift that creates bitterness and separates friends. I've experienced that as well. Lastly, to cultivate friendship is to be sincere. Proverbs 26, 18 and 19, like a man who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I'm only joking. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Failure are wounds of a friend, and profuse are the kisses of an enemy. Iron sharpens iron, and one man sharpens another. Whoever rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with his tongue. A man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet. Gossip has been described by some as what you would never say to somebody's face, but only say behind their back. Flattery is saying to somebody's face what you'd never say behind their back. And so flattery is inauthenticity. It's not sincerity. It's not sincerity. You're not really saying what's in your heart. You're not really saying what you really think. And the Bible talks about to be sincere means that you and I need to, and be sincere in friendship means that we need to be encouraging. We need to speak affirming, encouraging words to brothers and sisters who are friends and talk about how we see God's grace in their life and let them know, I see God changing you. And it is beautiful to watch, to encourage that, to encourage it. And it also means with sincerity that we also say the really hard things to the people that we love most. To say hard things. Whoever rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with his tongue. To rebuke. Say, don't do this. This is foolish. This is not wise. You're going to hurt yourself. You're going to hurt other people. Don't do this. Over the years of being a pastor, it's amazing to me that I've heard many people who count themselves good friends of others saying, well, I didn't know if it was my place to say that. It's your place. It's your place. Your friends. My most treasured friendships are those who have told me hard things when I needed to hear it, and they challenged me when I didn't want to be challenged. And they said, don't do this, or you must do this. You must continue on. I knew that they were for me, but that challenge still stung, and it stung hard. But they also, in doing so, brought grace and change into my life, that if they would have ignored what was going on in my life and ignored not saying something hard because the friendship was going to be risked in that, I don't know where I'd be. I don't know where I'd be. Sincerity is of utmost importance in friendship. If we're going to be true friends, we learn as Jesus or as Paul taught us to speak the truth in love. And that means both encouraging, affirming, this is where I see God at work in you. And also challenge, this is where you need to grow. This is where you need to grow. Now, in talking about true friendship, on one hand, it's like, oh, this is a nice little light sermon. Oh, yeah. But quite frankly, it's also a tender subject for me. It's tender for me. I'm not sure if it is for you, tender, but because quite frankly, as I go through this, I see ways in which I've let friends down. At times I've not been sincere, times I've not been available. I've prioritized other things to friendship. I've at times had friends totally cut me off, and I didn't have any idea why they cut me off, and try to reach out to them, and they won't have anything to do with me anymore, and I don't know why, and it's painful, it's hard, and I don't ever want to go through that again. Don't ever want to go through that again. And so there's a hesitancy at times with me with building new friendships, like, oh, I wonder where this one's going to go. I wonder where this one's going to go. It's painful. But there's also, as I've been going through this, it's tender because I've just been reflecting on other friends, people who have been faithful to me throughout my years. So God, thank you for the friends that you've put in my life. Thank you for those who have been there. Thank you for people that I've been able to rely on, that I know that they're there. And also there's been a tenderness. This has been tender. And the reason why this struck a chord with me when I read this article last year is because when talking about friendship and seeing what the Bible says about friendship, it actually shows that there's a longing in my heart that I have for a sweetness of friendship that never, ever, ever ends. And that's perfect. One of the Proverbs addresses this. Proverbs 27:9. Oil and perfume make the heart glad, and sweetness of a friend comes from his earnest counsel. I have a longing in my heart for perfect friendship. And we don't experience it right now. Nobody does. And even the best of friends, unfortunately, come to an end. We have to say goodbye. Yesterday marked the 2-year anniversary of a good friend of mine from college. We were one of my best friends in college. He died at an early age. It was gut-wrenching. I wept through the whole funeral. I was so glad they didn't ask me to do the funeral. I just wept the whole time. Like, I just miss him so much. And one of the amazing things about what Jesus offers is he offers us, in the new heavens and new earth, he offers us eternal friendship. I already mentioned it. Friends can be forever with Jesus. In the new heavens and new earth, we're actually created for something that Jesus says he will deliver for us. He will deliver for us perfect friendship. You and I, there's people in this room who are friends right now, and that friendship will last into forever, because Jesus is going to remake everything. But, and also, the longing that this taps into is a longing that we have in our hearts for actually a perfect friendship that no human being can actually fulfill. We're actually made for a friendship with God himself. This is one of the most amazing things that I think, one of the most amazing things about Jesus is that Jesus is described in the Bible as the king and we're his subjects. He's the Lord and we're his servants. He's the shepherd and we're his sheep. He's the husband and we're his bride. He's the head and we're the body. And he also says, I'm the true friend and I've come to make you my friends. Jesus' mission, in one hand, is to make enemies into friends. Memorial Day was Monday, right? And maybe you saw on Facebook or Twitter or around one of the famous verses that said, no man has greater love than this, and he laid down his life for his friends. Do you know where that came from? That came from Jesus. That came from Jesus talking about his disciples and talking to all who he came to save. You don't know greater love than this. I've come to lay down my life for you. Why did Jesus lay down his life? Well, because we're not loyal all the time. We're not sincere. We're not attentive to others. We're very attentive to our own interests. And that's all sin. That's all a failure to love. And Jesus said, I came to give my life to live a perfect life of friendship for you. I'll make you perfect friends. But he also came and he experienced some of the greatest, most devastating things that can happen to a friendship. He was betrayed by a kiss. on the night that he was betrayed. That's how the communion begins. On the night that Jesus was betrayed, one of his closest friends betrayed him. If you've ever been left by a close friend, Jesus knows exactly what it's like. He knows what it's like. He knows how to walk with you through that pain and through that turmoil. He knows what it's like to be misunderstood. And so he came to also understand, to be a perfect friend who knows what it's like to go through what we go through so that he can walk with us. It's amazing that this God is like this, because he's the one that holds the whole thing in his hands. Everything's made for him, and yet he came for us as friends, to make us friends. Someone I know very dearly, her whole life was changed one high school year when she went to a camp. She'd grown up in the church and grown up hearing about Jesus and hearing about God. And somebody said to her, it's about a relationship. It's about a relationship. A relationship? I never thought about it that way before. No one had ever told her that it's about a relationship. At the core of Christianity, at the core of Christianity is a relationship, that God loves us and we can actually know him. We can actually have a relationship with him. And Jesus actually came to call us friends, to make us friends. And when he makes us his friends, he teaches us, convicts us, shapes us, gives us encouragement, gives us his spirit to become true friends to other people. That's what we're made for. This morning, we're going to do with Jesus what we do with many of our other friends. We're going to share a meal together. Notice that about how most of our relationships are continually cultivated around a meal or having a drink together, going out for coffee or something like that. And that's what Jesus has done as a way of reminding us of our friendship with him, or better, of him making us friends. He gave us a meal of a piece of bread, cracker. It's gluten-free here, so you, if you have gluten intolerances, you can partake. And he also gave us a cup, a wine. And Jesus told his disciples, and he tells us as well, that this is my body given for you. I'm laying down my body for you. No man has greater love than this, that he laid down his life for his friends. I'm laying down my life for you to make you my friends. And that's what we're going to remember here today, Jesus' power and his life, death, and resurrection in making us his friends. I want to ask you, if you don't know Jesus in relationship, now's the time to come to him and give your life to him and say, I want to know you in relationship. I've heard of you. I've heard people talk about you. I've read about you in the Bible. I want to know you. Today's the day to do that. Take your time and say, Jesus, I want to be in relationship with you. And let him make you his true friend and make you into true friend to others. I'm going to pray, and then the ushers will come forward and they're going to pass out the bread first, and then we're going to wait until everybody has it, and then I'll come up and lead us in eating the cracker together, and we'll do the same thing with a cup, okay? Let me pray. Father, thank you for your mercy, your goodness, your kindness, your grace. Thank you for your mission to make enemies into friends, that you loved us so that you gave your son, and Jesus, you willingly came to make us friends. Rebels, enemies that you gave your life for. And God, I ask that you would increase our experience of relationship with you, our interaction and relationship with you, and that you would shape us as individuals and as a church to be true friends to one another, to our neighbors, to renew this valley in our neighborhoods. In Jesus' name, amen.